Have we reached a tipping point in American society where there has to be a Jesus revolution? If so, what does it look like? And what's it going to mean to you and to me?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Yeah, I know revolution is a strong word. You hear it being sung in the background. You hear my announcer talk about it every day. Now I'm bringing it up yet again. Is it time for a true moral cultural revolution in our society? A gospel-based revolution, not one of violence, not one of hatred, not one of intimidation, not one of anger, not one of fear, but one based on the radical principles of Jesus. Is this the tipping point we have needed in our society for the church to awaken and say enough is enough? It's time that we truly follow Jesus, whatever the cost or the consequence. Michael Brown, delighted to be with you this Monday. Welcome to The Line of Fire. To weigh in on this subject, the number to call is 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. Online, askdrbrown.org. Just click on The Line of Fire to weigh in with comments there. I've got a wonderful announcement that we're really excited about. The revolution going digital in an important way. Something very new happening this week. I'll tell you about that in a little while. But this whole week, I want to devote to the subject of Jesus revolution. Today, looking at society and the tipping point where we're at, and what it means to us. I'm not discouraged, not in the least. In fact, as I see some of the increasing darkness, it encourages me that awakening is near for the people of God, and that at least a remnant will rise up with holy dedication. And if a few get on fire, the rest can get on fire. Tomorrow, I want to talk about where there needs to be revolution in the church. Before there can be revolution in society, there needs to be revolution in the church. The radical, dramatic, sweeping change has to start with us. And then Wednesday, a battle plan, strategy, things that we can implement, live out. And then on Thursday, revolution of return to our Jewish roots, which reminds me to say Chag Sameach, happy holidays, a blessed Passover to all, to my Jewish listeners, to my Gentile listeners. We should unite at this time around the Passover season, praying for our Jewish friends who don't know Jesus Yeshua, to ultimately recognize him as the Passover lamb, to recognize that there has been a greater exodus, an exodus not just from Egypt, but an exodus from sin through the blood of the lamb. And 1 Corinthians, the 5th chapter, Paul writing to Gentile believers, but probably people who had been in the synagogues before as God-fearing Gentiles and knew the Jewish calendar. He talks about dealing with sexual immorality in their midst and warns them that a little leaven leavens the whole lump, and then says, all right, so let us then keep the feast of Passover. Is he talking about a literal observance or metaphorical? You could argue either way, but the point is they knew about it. For Messiah, he says, our Passover lamb has been sacrificed, so let's keep the feast, not with the unleavened bread of malice, the unleavened bread of sin in their midst, with the leaven of sin and malice and ungodliness in their midst, but with the unleavened bread of sincerity and truth. I've got some real shocking news for you, but I will guide you through it in a way that will help you keep a kingdom perspective, that'll help you keep focused on the Lord, and rather than being discouraged, will encourage you and energize you to stand up and do what is right. Also, we come back, I just have to tell you one personal story, the fish crisis. The fish crisis last week, the Siamese fighting fish crisis that got me out of bed at 3 in the morning. Yeah, I'll tell you about it when we come back.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Tipping point. When things get to a point in society that you have to take a stand, that you are forced to make a choice, that you can no longer sit on the sidelines, have we reached such a tipping point in American society that there needs to be a moral cultural revolution based on the gospel? I say absolutely yes, without a doubt, and I'll give some of my reasons for that over the rest of this broadcast. Michael Brown, welcome back to The Line of Fire. 866-34-TRUTH, 866-348-7884. I've got so many serious things to talk to you about today, but first, on the lighter side, Nancy went up to visit our older daughter Jennifer and her husband Jimmy and their two kids who live in Maryland, Damascus, Maryland, went up to visit them last week and help out around the house and spend time with the grandkids. So she was away for a week from a Saturday to a Saturday and prepared all the food and stuff for my mom because my 9-year-old mom lives with us. So breakfast, lunch, dinner, we give her. And prepared everything so it'd be easy for me to do in her absence. It was a non-travel week for me, so I was home and was able to do this around radio and speaking locally and things like that. Well, anyway, I had everything. We're on top of everything. On top of everything. And Thursday night, I was real tired. I hadn't slept enough, and I couldn't fall asleep. It was late. It was about 2:30, 2:40 in the morning. And suddenly, I still don't know. Sorry if I startled you, but that's what happened to me. I still don't know what got me thinking about this. Honestly, I don't know. But all I know is I realized I forgot to feed the fish. I forgot to feed the fish the entire time she was away. So she left Saturday and fed the fish. But this is now Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, Wednesday, Thursday. And I don't know how long the fish can make it without food. And I've never fed the fish before. So I jump out of bed. I run downstairs. I can't find. And he does not look good. He does not look good. His gills look funny. And they've got these flowing fins, Siamese beta, fighting fish, beta fish. These flowing, whatever you call them. It's not fins. It's just, the flowing, what's the name for it? Someone tell me who's an expert in this. But they look ragged. They didn't look good to me. And I thought, oh, no. So I get online, what do you feed the fish if you've got food? Because I can't find the food. I look everywhere for the food. I pray, God, show me where the food is. I can't find the food. I get online. I check. I can't find anything. I thought, I can't let the fish die. It's just a fish. I understand. But Nancy asked me to take care of it. She likes this little fish. I can't let the little guy die. And so I search everywhere, get online, and they said you can, if you needed to, like slice up tiny, tiny pieces of carrot or lettuce if you have to. And so Nancy's a vegan, complete, total vegan. And I says, oh, but she's away, and the refrigerator is basically cleared out of vegetables. So it's like, all right, only place that's open this time is Walmart. It's about 10 minutes from my house. So I guess cold out. I put my coat on, get dressed, put my coat on, go to Walmart, and I saved the receipt just for the fun of it, like 3:07 a.m. Purchasing the fish food there, run into the big store, find it, come back, get home, feed the guy. He seems hungry. Next day's just not looking good, and I noticed late at night, and I hadn't told Nancy yet. I wanted him to recover and get back to normal. I see late at night he's just laying towards the bottom of the fish tank, and I thought, oh, boy. So I emailed Nancy, and I told her what happened. I said, he's not looking good. And she didn't email me back. I thought, she was upset it would be mildly, but I thought, oh, she's probably disappointed or was just going to wait till she gets home. Well, she didn't email back, and she thought, oh, he's fine. The fish is fine. I didn't know this. She gets home, and I said, all right, take a look. She goes, he's fine. He looks fine. I said, what do you mean? I said, the gills, she goes, he's iridescent. That's just his color. I said, and the flowing stuff, it looked, she goes, no, that's the way he always looks. And she goes, sometimes he just likes to lay on the bottom of the fish tank. So I said, well, were you impressed that I got up at 3 a.m. to go to Walmart to get fish food? She said, yes. And, I could have waited a few hours for them, but no, I had to do it right then. So the fish crisis turned out not to be a crisis. And perhaps as much as that's a funny little story, perhaps you're going through something that appears to be a crisis that is not. Oh yeah, I didn't plan on this, but let me tell you something I found going through some boxes I had in the back of my car. There was an envelope, and on it had my name on the front, and on the back it said, "There is no crisis." And a friend of mine had given that to me with an offering for our ministry. We work out together. He's a younger man of God, a pastor in the area. We'll work out together regularly. And one day he was going through a miserably rough time. Everything was going wrong at the exact same time in the church he had planted, and it was kind of the perfect storm. And I felt deep in my heart, I said, there is no crisis. There is no crisis. I knew it in my gut. Everything's going to come out fine. Don't even sweat it. There is no crisis. And he knew it. He received it in his spirit. He went home and said to his wife, there is no crisis. She believed it. The fear, the anxiety, the worry, whatever it was that was hitting them, the stress disappeared, and everything turned out great. Now, hear me. In terms of the society, there is a terrible crisis, but there is no crisis in the kingdom. What I mean is this. There is a terrible crisis in American society and much of the world's society. And we are at a massive tipping point that has not been seen by any previous generation in American history. However, in the house of God, in the presence of God, there is no crisis. There is urgency, there is purpose, but there is no crisis because God is moving forward. And the kingdom of God is advancing. And what Satan means for evil, what society means for evil, what people mean for evil, God will turn for good. 866-348-7884. Okay, why do I say we are at this tipping point? Why do I say that? Well, let's just consider a few things. Let's just consider the cases that are coming before the Supreme Court this week. One, to decide the legality of Prop 8, the constitutional amendment passed in California saying that marriage is the union of one man and one woman, passed twice. Is that constitutional? Or does a man have a right to marry a man and a woman have a right to marry a woman? And then later in the week, both cases expected to be decided by June, is DOMA, the Defense of Marriage Act, legal? DOMA, which established marriage nationally as the union of one man and one woman. Now, please understand me. If somehow we understood that the Bible didn't mean what we thought it meant, if somehow we understood that God did not ordain marriage as the union of a man and a woman, if somehow we discovered that God didn't mean what he said when he said that it was an abomination for all people, for a man to sleep with a man, have sex with a man, or that the Bible did not mean what it said when it spoke of practicing fornicators, practicing adulterers, practicing homosexuals, not entering the kingdom of God. If we were wrong on all those different points, and if in fact God was perfectly fine with a man being with a man or a woman being with a woman, and perfectly fine with redefining marriage, then by all means, we should embrace that viewpoint. If God said it was fine, then it's surely in the best interest of society. But friends, nothing has changed. Nothing has changed. We have no more historical information, no more archaeological information, no more textual information, no more linguistic information, no more information of any kind that should cause us to question for a split second what God said in his word, nor should it cause us to question for a split second what's best for marriage and family. What's changed? The media bombardment, people getting away from the word, more and more compromise. Yeah, and the fact that more and more people know a gay or lesbian person is a nice person. Or a couple that seems like a nice couple. Or two moms or two dads raising a kid seems like a good kid. Is that big a revelation? Did we all think that all gays and lesbians were sex fiend demons? Did we all think that they were child predators? Did we all think that they didn't love each other, many of them, deeply in their relationships? Did we all think that none of them could care about a kid? Come on. This is not new information. What's happened is there is now a radical shift in society to the point that increasingly you are now codified as a bigot, no better than the KKK, just for saying that a man should marry a woman, not another man, that you have a problem with making marriage genderless, that you have a problem with a kid being adopted by two dads or two moms. You now say that, and increasingly through the media and even by some of the courts, you are being codified as a bigot, no better than a racist. How did this happen? How did this happen? If it's not time for us to stand up and bring about change through the gospel, when are we going to do it?
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Okay, I hope you're sitting down, or if you're standing, that you're standing safely, because what I'm about to talk to you about is shocking. Now, I want to encourage you again. The bad things that I'm talking about provide the backdrop for encouragement to us that now is the time to really go after God. Now is the time to really obey Him. Now is the time to be unashamed of Jesus. Now is the time to quit playing games in our own lives. Now is the time to really go after God as families. Now is the time as pastors and leaders to draw a line in the sand with love and say we take our stand for the gospel no matter what comes. 866-34-TRUTH. Michael Brown, thank you for joining us. All right. I got a lengthy email from a woman in Massachusetts. I actually spoke with her on the phone and got a lengthy follow-up. She says this, lives in Massachusetts. When her son was 16 and experiencing same-sex attraction, the adjustment counselor at his school referred him to the Cape and Island Gay and Straight Youth Alliance, a local gay-straight alliance organization, without our knowledge or consent. Friends, this may be happening to your kid in a public school. Could be 12 years old in a middle school, and it's happening. Where a counselor says you need to go to the Gay Straight Alliance and come out to your peers there or to the advisors there, and we will not tell your parents, and we recommend that you don't listen to your parents if they are religious. They are homophobic. The school was unaware at that point. This mother writes that he had been sexually abused by an older neighborhood boy on many occasions when he was between the ages of 6 and 8 years old. At this Gay Straight Youth Alliance, he was told that he was born that way and that anyone who didn't embrace his sexual identity was a hater and a homophobe, including his family and the people of our church. Lessons he was already learning at school. The Gay Straight Youth Alliance also provided him with gay-affirming, anti-Christian, and sexually provocative materials. This is what they dealt with. The kid was actually taken from their home for a period of time with no reason, no legal basis, when he was 17 years old. And that's why they are now following through. It was for a short period of time, but it's a complete outrage. Now, California has already passed this, although it's held up in the courts because of legal appeals. New Jersey is looking to pass this, although Governor Christie has expressed in all probability a veto. Pass what? A bill that would make it illegal for a minor, even with parental consent, to go to a licensed counselor or therapist to get help for unwanted same-sex attraction. Did you hear that? You got a 17-year-old son. He's troubled by same-sex attraction. It's not who he is. It's not who he wants to be, but it seems to be deeply rooted in him. His mom and dad say, hey, we're standing with you, son. We love you. And he says, I'd like to go for some counseling. New Jersey is looking to make it illegal. The committee that voted on it first was overwhelmingly in favor of passing the bill. Illegal to go for counseling for unwanted same-sex attraction. Now, what if he said, you know, I want to explore being gay, but I need someone to affirm my homosexuality. By all means, go for counseling. perfect. What if he said, I feel like I'm a boy trapped in a girl's body. And I'm convinced I'm really your girl. I want to go for counseling to get on some type of hormone therapy and then find out about sex change surgery. By all means, go for it. I'm not exaggerating. Not in the least. Now, here's the outrage of all outrages. Please read my article, Did a Gay Activist Lie to the New Jersey Senate? Did a Gay Activist Lie to the New Jersey Senate? It's on townhall.com. Or just go to my website, askdrbrown.org, click on the line of fire, and you will link to it. It's gotten a lot of attention since it was posted this morning. One particular testimony last week before this Senate committee had people moved in tears, a man who now identifies by a woman and goes by the name of Brielle Goldani, talked about being sent as a 14-year-old by her parents to a camp run by the Assemblies of God called True Directions in Ohio. There was subject to shock therapy and other horrific abuses. Now, Chris Doyle, who joined me on the show last week, who is a professional counselor and a former homosexual himself with the International Healing Foundation, he testified as well, and he heard her story, his story, this Brielle's story, and was very troubled by it, moved by it. You know, I'm so sorry that happened to you. And of course, we completely repudiated that. But it made him wonder about the story. So he looked into it, made a number of phone calls, and discovered this. Are you ready? That according to the Office of the Ohio Secretary of State and Attorney General, no such camp called True Directions has ever existed in Ohio. The Assemblies of God, including the local church that allegedly sponsored the camp, never heard of it and would never sanction such barbarous treatments. Licensed therapists in Ohio completely disavowed such treatments. So where did the testimony come from? Well, according to Christopher Doyle, it came from a 1999 film titled But I'm a Cheerleader, starring RuPaul. In the film, the main character is suspected of being a lesbian by her family, who then proceeds to send her to a conversion therapy camp called True Directions. You got to be hit straight out of a Hollywood script. Someone else, a man struggling with his own homosexual desires, wrote to a friend of mine and said, I don't know why, but it never occurred to me that many of these stories of barbaric gay to straight therapy might be fabrications. In particular, one I've heard about several times is a camp called True Directions in Ohio. You know, Nancy and I, some years ago, were comparing notes about, we had a dog that I got sick, and mine got sent to a farm in Pennsylvania, and she said, so did mine. And then we started laughing. Wait a second. The dogs got put to sleep, but that was the line we were fed. Just growing up in New York, the dog was sent to a farm in Pennsylvania. Now, I'm sure that there are gays and lesbians, some of you listening, that have had traumatic counseling experiences, just like just about everyone that's had counseling experiences has had either positive income, negative outcome, positive outcome, or neutral outcome. I'm not denying some of you have been through tough times, but this whole story appears to be a fabrication, and yet it's apparently the most moving story that pushed the Senate committee to do what they did. Friends, this is outrageous. If you live in New Jersey, you've got to contact your senator and write to Governor Christie and say, we absolutely oppose this bill. It is government overreach into our families and government overreach between patients and counselors. Okay, so much more to say, but I'm really excited to make this announcement. Finally, after years, we have my two books on revolution. Revolution, the Jesus Call to Change the World, and Revolution in the Church, now available in ebook form. Yes. And instead of paying $32 for the books, $15.99, you can download them both and get a free Verso reading app, which means on any cell phone, any smartphone, any tablet, any computer, you can read this. And then when you just click on a verse reference, the verse actually comes up. $15.99. When you call in, we need your email address to send this out, and the books will be released in just 2 days. So call now to order. Be the first to get this in digital form. 1-800-278-9978. 1-800-278-9978. Or go online, askdrbrown.org. Click on the online bookstore for this week's special offer. Again, 1-800-278-9978.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Get into the Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Let me wish you a happy, blessed Passover that starts tonight. When you celebrate the death and resurrection of Jesus Yeshua later this week, celebrate it as part of the larger Passover season. I'll give you more insight about that, God willing, on the Thursday broadcast. Michael Brown, thanks so much for joining us today on the Line of Fire broadcast. I am saying today that we have reached the tipping point in society when we're at a point where the Supreme Court could potentially decide that there's a constitutional right for a man to marry a man or a woman to marry a woman. And then once you start talking about, quote, marriage equality, you open a massive Pandora's box. In fact, it's already on its way open in many ways. When you have the state of Washington with Obamacare saying that businesses must pay for abortion-related treatments, drugs, etc., we're at the tipping point. In many ways, we've been here for a while, but my hope is as things get so completely outrageous that the people of God will recognize we've been playing games, we've been just trying to advance our own interests, we've been trying to have nice church and nice lives, as opposed to remembering that we are here as soldiers and ambassadors, not fighting with physical violence or physical hatred or physical intimidation or those types of earthly weapons, but fighting with the weapons of prayer and love and fasting and truth and holy living and compassion for lost and dying world. 866-348-7884. And look, let me remind you, I am a product of two revolutions. I'm a product of the counterculture revolution of the 60s. That's why I started getting high. That's why I was shooting heroin at the age of 15. Yes, I was bar mitzvahed in 1968 at the age of 13, but I saw my first rock concert in 1968 at the age of 13, Jimi Hendrix. And when I saw him in concert, I was so impressed by it and the power of the music and the power of their personalities and who they were and how counterculture they were. I had to be in that mindset, lifestyle, culture. That's what opened the door for decadence and sin in my own life. But then I got saved in 71 at the age of 16. And there was another revolution taking place, often referred to as the Jesus Revolution or the Jesus People Movement, when God started saving hippies, radicals, rebels from all around the world. Listen to this clip. It's CBS News, July 1971.
Many young people have dropped out of modern society because they feel it is too impersonal. They have searched for alternate ways to find a personal relationship with their fellow men and the universe around them. Lately, many of them have sought to find the way through religion.
Of all the things that have caught on among the young, this is perhaps the most unexpected. A prayer service and baptism by immersion on the Pacific at Santa Monica Beach. In recent years, the more experimental of America's young have gone through Oriental religions and mysticism, long hair and offbeat clothing, drugs and sex. Now, in surprisingly large numbers, they're turning to Jesus.
All right. And here's, maybe I don't have time to play this. I'll play this as soon as we come back, and I will get straight to your calls. But I want to encourage you that in the chaos of the 60s, there was the positive aspect of, say, civil rights movement, and radical feminism, as crazy as it was, did help bring further equality to women in certain positive ways, like a woman doing the same job as a man, getting paid the same. But of course, radical feminism was so off, and the sexual revolution so destructive, and gay liberation so misguided, and the interest in Eastern religion, and on and on and on. Drugs, sex, rock and roll, the whole culture epitomized in Woodstock. In the midst of that, starting around 67, God started moving as people started praying and crying out, and hippies, radicals, rebels from every stripe, from all around the world, started getting saved. It was kind of the late wave of that in the late 70s that Bob Dylan, for a season, expressed and confessed boldly his faith in Jesus. What I'm saying is, it's time for another Jesus revolution. And in fact, I and many others believe that there's going to be an outpouring of mercy and grace in the homosexual community, and hundreds of thousands are going to come to faith.
God of light, hear our cry, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Billy Sunday asked this, when is a revival needed? When carelessness and unconcern keep the people asleep. When may a revival be expected? When the wickedness of the wicked grieves and distresses the Christian? Charles Finney, when the church finds its members falling into gross and scandalous sins, then it is time for the church to awake and cry to God for a revival of religion. Oh, we are at those points and beyond. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, which will be momentarily, this is Jim Palisari from the documentary Fallen Angel about Larry Norman. This is the beginning of the clip. And then the second part is a hippie preacher preaching on a college campus in the 60s. This is what was happening late 60s, early 70s, in what was called the Jesus Revolution or the Jesus People Movement. When I got saved, when so many of my friends got saved, when so many people I know today in Jewish ministry, living and ministering in Israel today, we got saved, I believe God is poised to do this again for those in the South, fixing to do it. But the awakening must begin with us turning to God. Listen to this report.
It started on the west coast of the United States around 1967. All of a sudden, these hippies, these dropouts, these many thought the scum of society, were discovering Jesus Christ.
We're not asking you to believe us. We're not asking you to believe God's word. All we're asking you to do is, in the honesty of your own heart, check it out.
It was just happening. It was in the air. I believe God is going to respond to the cries of his people. But friends, it's going to mean a lot of shaking. It's going to mean a lot of upheaval. You see, that gets me nervous. Well, Jesus said, in this world you'll have tribulation, but be of good cheer. I've overcome the world. If you know the Lord, in him you're an overcomer. Put your trust in him and be determined to honor him and walk with him. And what Satan, society, sin, the world mean for evil, mean for destruction, mean for radical change, God can use for good. Let's go to the phone, starting with, all right, I was going to start in the Bronx, but instead we'll start in Boston. Nathan, thank you for calling the Line of Fire.
Hi, thank you, Dr. Brown. Just have a concern. I do have a, you know, because for privacy, they don't want to call it names. I do have a friend of mine who does have a fellowship, Christian fellowship within Boston, one of the Boston high schools. And recently the GSA, which is the gay and lesbian group, started coming. And, you know, I was stumped with the question, you know, what do you do? Do you tell them about the Lord? Do you confront them about their sins? How do you handle that? You know, because you don't want to give the wrong impression that God is approving. But it seems like they are so comfortable coming. They seem to be coming and helping the Christian groups do a lot of things. And I just found it so strange because they're coming and some of the Christians are not. And how do you handle a case like that?
Yeah, Nathan, it's one that we'll be confronted with increasingly. And I really appreciate you bringing it up. So make sure all of our listeners understand. Nathan's saying that there's a school here in his area. He's not mentioning the name, where there's a Christian fellowship that meets in the school. There's also a gay-straight alliance in the school. And both of them have legal rights in Massachusetts to be there. Normally, you just need a faculty sponsor or something like that, or you have to meet outside of school hours. They may have certain parameters. So now you've got these kids who identify as gay and lesbian, bisexual, transgender, coming to the meetings. And from what you're saying, they're not coming to disrupt. They're not coming to mock the positions. They're coming. They're seemingly interested. They're helping out. Now, on the one hand, this may simply be another strategy of infiltrating and seeking to discourage the Christians from holding to their stands and saying, look at how nice and friendly we are. How can you be against us? It's also possible that they genuinely enjoy the Christian meetings and that they're very nice kids and they like helping and things like that. Either way, How do the Christians respond? Anytime I have people coming to my meetings that differ with me, I look at it as a gift from God. If I have rabbis, counter-missionaries coming to hear me when I speak or listen to me on the radio, if I have gay activists show up at a meeting, if I have people who differ with me for other reasons, atheists coming to a debate of mine, I'm so thankful for that. I look at that as a perfect opportunity to demonstrate Jesus to them. And what I would say to these kids is this: listen, you know that we believe that homosexual practice is wrong and sinful in God's sight. You understand that. And we're not here to argue with you about that. If you want to talk to us about it, we're happy to. But if you want to come to the meetings and hear more about Jesus, and if you want us to be praying for you, and if you want to sit and listen to the word, or if you want to help us set up tables or whatever, you are absolutely welcome. And let these Christian kids show the love of God to these other kids. Some of these kids in the Gay Straight Alliance have been raised in the faith and have a conflict because they believe in Jesus, and they may have a liberal church and the Gay Straight Alliance telling them that Jesus is fine with their homosexuality, but they may be struggling over it. Some of them just may be hurting, and they're being drawn to the life that's in the Christian group. But I would absolutely take this as an opportunity to share the gospel with them, to develop real friendships and relationships. And then you need someone to come in and make sure that the Christian kids fully understand the issues. Or if you don't have someone like that, let us know and we can put you in touch with people or give you links where they could sit down and watch some videos, or we could send them some material for free so that they really understand what the issues are. And then if it seems they get to a point where they can press the issues, then say, hey, you know, why don't we watch this debate between Mike Brown and Harry Knox? You know, one's a conservative believer and the other says he's a gay Christian. Or why don't we talk through some of the issues and see if they could really make progress with these kids? But Nathan, I would look at it as an opportunity from the Lord. And if the kids from the Gay Straight Alliance have ulterior motives or are there to change minds, well, on that level, let them meet with clear conviction. But every other level, open the door, reach out to them with the love of God, seek to lead them to a true relationship with Jesus, and out of that, into a holy lifestyle.
Yeah, if I could ask one more question.
Please.
What if some of these kids want to pray at the meeting?
Well, here's the thing. If the only ones allowed in the meeting are those who are genuinely born again and committed to Jesus and living holy lives, and no one else is allowed to come to the meeting or pray or do anything else, that's one thing. But I don't think that's the case. Like, what if you had a kid come in there who's not a believer, right? He gets high a lot, but he's a spiritual seeker. And during the prayer time, he just says, oh, great spirit in the sky, and female spirit in the sky, I pray to you both that, you know, you're going to let the kid pray, aren't you? And then afterwards try to talk to him about who the Lord really is. So I wouldn't restrict it. If they are trying to pray for others or minister in a certain way, then I would say, okay, we're going to draw a line there. But if you're all praying and then these kids want to pray, great, pray. If they pray any kind of prayer, though, that's trying to argue their position, you know, or God show these others that it's okay to be gay, and then you want to say, hey, that's out of order here. You know, you're interrupting our meeting and trying to push your theology. That's out of order. But I would let them do what they do. But then I have a private meeting just with the Christian kids and really make them to know what's going on and what the strategy is.
The reason I asked, too, is because of the there are certain policies that do permit persons from targeting or being exclusive or prohibiting at a group from being involved. So you can't be exclusive. You can't exclude at a person. So that's why it's that type of environment. It's not a church environment where you can just
right, exactly.
make a certain statement.
But what you need to do is have the Christian kids come together and make sure they're equipped and they're ready. And then look at this as a golden opportunity. I wish I had it every day. I wish every day I had someone wanting a gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender identified person wanting to come to a meeting where I was teaching and hear me. And I would do my best to make sure that they knew the truth of God, the love of God, the possibility of becoming a new creation in Him. Hey Nathan, would these kids, the Christian kids, watch some videos, some talks, if we sent some videos their way, do you think they'd actually watch those?
I think they probably would. They most likely would wash them. So that would definitely help. I did think about, I actually worked with them, so I was thinking about going in and having conversations.
Yeah.
You know,
Yeah, I've got a break here, Nathan, but God bless you for doing that. Stay right there. Andrew's going to come on the phone in a moment. I want to send you a DVD series. It's 5 DVDs called Can You Be Gay and Christian? The first one will be such an eye-opener for them, where I talk about, are we using the Bible to sanction anti-homosexual prejudice? Then I've got the debate with gay activist Harry Knox there. And then in addition to that, we've got a DVD just on how to minister to the gay and lesbian community. So stay right there. I want to send you that series as a gift. And a couple months from now, shoot us a line, give us a call, tell us how it's going.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Did you know that there is an old Jewish tradition preserved in what's called Midrash Rabbah that says that one of the reasons for the flood in Noah's day is that men started writing marriage deeds with other men? Yeah, I mean, obviously it's a document written a few thousand years after the event, but still fascinating tradition. 866-348-7884. I'm saying we're at that tipping point in society. For those of you who love Starbucks, I've never been a coffee drinker, so not going to Starbucks has not been an issue for me. But just personal conscience, I haven't given them my own business for years since... Well, I found out their stands locally when they were sponsoring gay pride events in our city and there were vulgar, ugly things going on in these events. It was a heterosexual event. It would have been ugly and vulgar. And folks documented it, took pictures, sent it to them, and they said, no, we sponsor diversity. That's a core value for us. And I said, it's documented in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America. And I said, okay, are you sponsoring like pro-life event or sponsoring teen abstinence? And absolutely not. Wouldn't even think of that. Got a little upset with me for even asking the question. So the CEO of Starbucks recently at a board meeting, when a board member, a conservative board member, said, hey, look, we're taking a hit in our stock. Our business is down since you've gotten so aggressively in favor of gay marriage. He basically said, well, you take your business somewhere else. If you're not happy with our stand, go somewhere else. So much for diversity and tolerance. We're at that tipping point. Yeah, the Starbucks thing is just a tiny little indication of that. And if I boycotted everything that was pro-gay, I wouldn't be able to use my computer or use my credit card or fly on airlines or anything. Certain things, just as my own personal statement, I have made them. And then other things, if I'm using a computer and the manufacturer, the software people are strongly pro-gay activists, then great, I'll use their tools to subvert what I believe is a wrong cause and speak the truth. 866-348-7884. All my listeners in Houston, KKHT, I just need a minute with you, so stay right there. Let's listen to what happened late 70s when Bob Dylan had a radical religious conversion experience. This was happening all over in the late 60s, early 70s. Bob Dylan's kind of on the late wave of this. Some people going to his concerts weren't particularly happy.
He stinks! Man, he's the worst. He's bad. He don't sing nothing like he used to. That's it.
He talked about religion. He preached. That's why I walked out.
He walked out. Yeah, so wait, so here's a ticket. Here, you want the ticket?
I paid $26 to go in there and see a show. And I could have went to church to see what I saw, you know? I mean, I don't know. I expected something different.
Uh-huh. Look, people were just getting changed like that. Why can't God do that again, even more radically? But there needs to be a real determined turn to God from those of us who know him. Fervent prayer, crying out, putting away the distractions, standing for truth in our own lives, asking God to give us a broken heart of love and compassion for those that differ with us, and then draw that line in the sand and say, I'm going to follow Jesus no matter what comes my way. Okay, before I go back to the phones, our friends in KKHT, as of this time next week, you will not be able to connect with me via radio, and hopefully it's only for a short period of time, but you'll need to connect with me via internet. You can subscribe to the podcast for free. You can listen live on your computers. What happened is this. When we did a major national expansion a little over 2 years ago, one of the major cities we moved into on the radio was Houston. And we did it through, in many ways, the graces of the station there, who put us on at a phenomenally low rate, a sacrificial rate for them. And because our budget is absolutely completely stretched, we have to believe God for funds to pay bills on a daily basis. And even then, it's miraculous in terms of what we need. And so we are not in a position where we can pay what the station needs to get. So because of that, after being so gracious to us for 2 years, they need to move on. So please don't call with any complaints or anything negative. I'm sure they're going to have great programming to follow me. But it does underscore the importance for all of you listening in other cities to be standing with us and to be helping us however you can so that we can make a difference and continue to broadcast in your cities. We're on 250 stations nationally. This is the first time we've had to take a step back like this, but it's only through the graciousness of the folks in Houston that we've been able to be on this far, this long. So give me your appreciation, and then make sure you connect with me. Go to AskDrBrown.org. Click on the Line of Fire. You can find out other ways to listen. You can subscribe by podcast, because we absolutely value each and every one of you and are hoping to get to the Houston area later this year for some special meetings and rallies. All right, let me grab one more quick call. Bob in Hyattsville, Maryland, thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Thank you, sir. You know, I was wondering, you mentioned about Jimi Hendrix concert when you're 13. I tried to go back and kind of remember. I was somewhere between 11 and, I guess, 16 or 17 when I saw his first concert that I saw. It was at the Washington Hilton in D.C. Is that the one you were at, perchance?
No, I was at the, it was November of 68. It was at the New York Philharmonic. I was able to locate exactly where it was one day when I was at a bookstore and saw a book on Jimi Hendrix, and in the back it had a list of all of his concerts. But I'm almost sure you get online and you can then search for his concerts and you'll find out, and maybe you could nail it. But our time is short. What kind of impact did it have on you?
I thought that was one of the greatest and most unexplainable experiences of my life.
Yeah.
And it would set me in what I thought was a great direction. I mean, I always wanted to be a writer, but I thought, gosh, but how could I write like him? And there was others too, not just him. But when I look back, I almost look at it now as maybe a false messianic experience.
Yeah. You know, Bob, I've got to jump in here, but okay. I will absolutely be talking about this again in the coming weeks, the power of music for moral and cultural revolution. Bob, you're exactly right. When you talk about it being an experience, they were called the Jimi Hendrix experience. And Hendrix himself said it's like young people coming to church. It's a religious experience for them. There is something powerful about it. I believe God can use anointed godly music in a more powerful way. But hey, I'm sorry I had to cut you off. I wanted to make sure, though, I got you in before the hour was out. Keep listening, because I'm going to be revisiting this subject as well. Friends, in fact, in my book, Revolution, I have a whole chapter on the power of music to affect cultural revolution. We're so excited. After years and years and years, my two books, Revolution and Revolution in the Church, are now available in digital form. Instead of paying $32 plus postage for the books, $15.99, you can download them and get a free app for a reader on your phone, your computer, your tablet. Call to order, 1-800-278-9978. There's not a more important time in my life for these books to be released in digital form. 1-800-278-9978, or go straight to AskDrBrown.org and click on the online bookstore. My bottom line today, we are absolutely at a cultural tipping point. This is the time when we must act. This is the time when we must stand. This is the time for a true gospel-based Jesus revolution. If not now, when? Have we reached a tipping point in American society where there has to be a Jesus revolution? If so, what does it look like? And what's it going to mean to you and to me?
It's time for The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Michael Brown is the director of the Coalition of Conscience and president of Fire School of Ministry. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. That's 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome, welcome to The Line of Fire. Yes, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Yes, we are absolutely serious about revolution. You say, are we going to start handing out weapons? No, no, no. Not that kind of revolution. Do we march on the government and pull down? No, no, no. Not that kind of revolution. A revolution where we get so radically changed by Jesus that we go and radically change our world. A revolution where we recognize enough is enough. Society has set itself against God in enough ways we can no longer just sit back and try to have our nice, lovely lives. It's at the breaking point. It's beyond the tipping point. It's time for Jesus' revolution. We'll talk about what that means. We'll talk about why I'm saying that. We'll talk about how to live it out. All this week, in fact, that's going to be our theme. Tomorrow, talking about revolution in the church, where the church needs to make radical change in order to go out and change the world. And then Wednesday, God willing, talk about strategies, how we live this out. And then Thursday, a revolution in the church of Jewish roots, which gives me the context to say Chag Sameach, happy holiday, happy Passover to you, begins tonight here in the States. It's already begun in different parts of the world. As you celebrate what many call Good Friday and Resurrection Sunday, do it in the context of the Passover season, in which it all took place in Yeshua's day. 866-348-7884. You can weigh in with your comments, to agree with me, to differ with me, to probe, to ask questions, to share your own story by calling 866-34-TRUTH. You can join me online, askdrbrown.org. Just click on the Line of Fire to add your comments there. Oh, where do we start? Well, I mentioned last hour, because I was speaking to our great listening audience in New York and New Jersey, the first hour of the show, I talked about a bill that's come before the Senate in New Jersey. The initial committee passed it on overwhelmingly, like a 7-2 vote or something, saying, yeah, let's look at this with the whole Senate, which would make it illegal, as California has sought to do, illegal for a minor, even with parental consent, to get counseling, professional counseling, if the child had unwanted same-sex attraction. Again, what that means is if that kid said, you know, I feel attracted to the same sex, I'm uncomfortable with it, can I meet with a counselor that can help me be comfortable and help me to really come out as gay? Absolutely. But, you know, I understand there's, you know, a lot of promiscuity and often high, you know, sexually transmitted diseases of a higher percent. Well, you don't worry about that. You just accept your gay identity. That's fine. Another kid, you know, I feel like I'm a boy trapped in a girl's body and I want to see a therapist. I'm 12. I want to see a therapist and get counsel and find out about hormone blockers to stop the onset of puberty and then hormone therapy later and possibly sex change surgery. You bet. Absolutely. We care about you. We care about your right to self-determination. Yeah, I'm 15. I'm attracted to the same sex. I'm really uncomfortable with that. It violates my moral and religious beliefs and my family values. And I want to get some counseling. It's so deeply rooted in my life. I want to try to understand this and how to deal with it and see about the possibility of change. Illegal! You talk about government overreach. Government overreach into the homes. Government overreach between client and therapist. This is an outrage. Perhaps the most outrageous thing is that it appears that the most moving testimony of all before the Senate was fabricated straight out of a Hollywood movie. Using even the very names that were used in the Hollywood movie. Read about it in my article, Did a Gay Activist Lie Before the New Jersey Senate? I'll tell you how to read that when we come back. More shocking news, but good news overall.
Fire we please, send the fire. It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into The Line of Fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Welcome back to The Line of Fire broadcast. Michael Brown, your listener-sponsored voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. I've got an exciting announcement, a digital announcement that I'll be making to you a little while, that something every one of you can take advantage of. So keep listening. 866-348-7884. So you've got this situation before a New Jersey Senate. Now, this was, people did not have to take oath. So was this perjury? Apparently not legally, if in fact it's a false testimony, as it appears to be. Was it perjury in a general sense? People might relate to it in that sense, but what's the use of having people testify before a Senate committee if you don't know if they're telling the truth and they're not sworn to tell the truth? But here, a man now identifies as a woman called Brielle Godani tells the story of 14 years old being sent to a camp called True Directions in Ohio under the auspices of the Assemblies of God, and they're subject to shock therapy and other things because Brielle identified as lesbian or transgender or however. And Christopher Doyle, who's been on the air with me, professional counselor, former homosexual himself, looked into the story because he testified before the Senate, too, and about the outrageous nature of this bill, saying that parents and a young person couldn't determine what they wanted to do in terms of professional counseling from one of same-sex attraction. And he found, Chris Doyle found, as he looked into this, that the Ohio Secretary of State and Attorney General said no such camp called True Directions has ever existed in their state. And the Assemblies of God said they never heard of it. The local church said they never heard of it. And louder still, everyone repudiated that any such practices could ever take place at anything under their auspices. And licensed therapists in Ohio completely disavowed such treatments. Could it be that just like Roe v. Wade, as we look now with the Supreme Court looking into, do we redefine marriage? Do we send it back to the states? Do we say that a man cannot marry a woman constitutionally? Do we say a man can marry a woman? I mean, a massive, massively important decision. Not in terms of determining right and wrong, but determining whether America gets things more right or more wrong. Determining whether America takes another step towards apostasy and deception on a national level, or whether at least puts up a line of rightness. Roe v. Wade was based on a lie. As we know, Norman McCovey getting saved subsequently, based on a lie. So here you've got testimony apparently based on a lie, but worse still, taken out of a Hollywood script from a 1999 movie featuring RuPaul. In the film, the main character, it's called But I'm a Cheerleader. In the film, the main character is suspected of being a lesbian by her family, who then proceeds to send her to a conversion therapy camp called True Directions. Thanks again to Chris Doyle for spotting that. Read the article. It is on townhall.com. Did a gay activist lie to the New Jersey Senate? Well, you've got that going on. But listen. What, Andrew? Someone call? Are you serious? You're serious about this? Okay, no. Just, boys, come on. We're trying to do a world-changing show here. Andrew was on the line for a while talking to someone, and I'm concentrating on reading some stories and looking at some other things as I'm doing the show, and I see this note here. Someone called and said they would cast demons out of me for a credit card payment. Once the procedure was done, they would reward me with pizza. All right, come on, but Andrew, you're thinking about pizza. That part is not dishonest. All right, friends, in all seriousness, a friend in Virginia sent me this article. I hadn't seen this from last Wednesday. Richmond, Virginia. You think of Richmond, do you think of a conservative part of the country? Do you think of Virginia, part of the Christian culture, Bible Belt on some level? And when you think of Baptists, our many Baptist friends, our many Baptist listeners, you think of conservative biblical values when you think of Baptists, don't you? I certainly do. By a close margin, The Richmond Baptist Association voted March 19th to retain the membership of a church which ordained a gay man to the ministry last fall. The 176 to 158 vote endorsed the committee's recommendation that the association, quote, embrace Ginter Park Baptist Church as a sister church, while acknowledging that many Richmond Baptist Association congregations would not choose to ordain a person who is homosexual. Now, look, let's understand something. If someone in a church says, I have unwanted same-sex attraction, I'm living a holy life to the Lord, I don't give in to this, I don't justify it, I don't believe this is the way God created me, or this is supposed to be the norm, but I can't shake these attractions, so I'm committed to being celibate and walking with the Lord and serving the Lord. Could that person be raised up in ministry? Of course they could be. Could that person be used of God? Of course they could be. And in fact, someone like that needs our admiration and support. Think of this, friends. If serving God meant that you could never marry, you say, but people can change. Well, they can, but not everybody does, or not everyone's been able to. So here you've got someone struggling and saying, okay, I'm going to live a holy life by God's grace. I'm not going to compromise here. I'm going to do the right thing before the Lord. But that means being celibate. That person is especially honorable. That's someone we should especially encourage. If that's what they meant, they ordained someone with unwanted same-sex attraction who was living a holy, devoted life to the Lord, that would be one thing. But if you're talking about ordaining a practicing homosexual or a practicing fornicator or a practicing adulterer or a practicing drunkard or any other thing that Scripture forbids, or a practicing exploiter and on, then you're talking about fundamentally throwing out Scripture. You say, but times have changed. Yes, they have, but the Word of God hasn't changed. The Word of God has not changed. The standards of God have not changed. What's best for a kid has not changed. God's definition of marriage has not changed. And if you say, well, I just believe in marriage equality for everybody, do you genuinely believe that? Marriage equality for all. Then you have just opened the door wider than you probably want to. I believe everyone has the right to marry the one they love. Really? Everyone? You have just opened the door more widely than you planned to. And the implications, the national implications, are massive. Massive. Every parent listening to me, listen very, very carefully. All right? I want to encourage you to have such an environment in your home that your kids can come to you with their deepest struggles and know they're going to be loved. I know it's not always easy. I know that kids, just like I did as a kid, the kids are going to feel they can't talk to their parents about certain things, or they want to have their sin and not let their parents know. But I want to encourage you to have firm and clear and definite standards, and yet, have a mentality, have an attitude, that no matter what your kid says to you, hey, dad, I've started fooling around with drugs, that rather than screaming or yelling or grounding the kid for the next 20 years, you say, hey, let's talk about it. What's going on? Mom, I really think I'm lesbian. I think that's who I am. Instead of saying, no, what did you do to us? What did your father and I do to deserve this? Say, hey, look, we love you. We love you. We don't believe God made you like this, and we believe there's a better outcome for this than you realize, but we love you. Let's talk. Don't let it be that they are so petrified of ever raising something to you because you react so fierce. And I'm not condemning you for reacting a certain way. I know it's understandable as a parent. Our kids are 35 and 34. Our grandkids now between 6 and 12. I mean, we've been through this. We understand. But you don't want it that your kids are coming out to their peers at school. And I just want you to know there's the very real possibility. If you're a kid, 12 years old, 16 years old, has struggled with same-sex attraction, if there's a gay-straight alliance anywhere in their school or in the community, it's a real possibility that they have been encouraged by the school to join that gay-straight alliance and to come out to their peers there, to the faculty advisors or counselors there. And those advisors might well be telling your kids, as we hear all the time, don't listen to your parents. Don't tell your parents you're even here. When people disagree with homosexuality, they're haters and they're homophobes. Don't listen to them. That very type of undermining can be going on at the same time that states are trying to pass laws to make it illegal for kids with unwanted same-sex attraction to get help. Oh, we're beyond the tipping point. The awakening has to start. How? With you? With me? Has to start here.
It's the Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Hey, friends, it is my joy to be with you on the Line of Fire this week. Our whole focus for the week is going to be on Jesus' revolution, the point that we have gotten to in society where the awakening must come, where we're backed into a corner and we realize we can't just say, well, I'm going to stay out of the culture wars. No, you can't. There's so much compromise in the church. There's so much defection in the world that we have to stand. 866-348, but we're going to do it the Jesus way. I'm going to tell you about some resources that'll tell you exactly how momentarily. The Universalist Association is one of the fastest growing denominations in the country, ballooning 15% over the past decade. But there's a growing group in their midst called Unitarian Universalists for Polyamory Awareness, the practice of loving and relating intimately to more than one person at a time. The UUPA, as it's called, encourages spiritual wholeness regarding polyamory, including the right of polyamorous people to have their unions blessed by a minister. Look, friends, a 12-year-old boy testified. 12-year-old boy testified before Jersey Senate, one of these committees, and explained why Rhode Island. He testified in Rhode Island in discussion about marriage there, and should marriage be redefined? And he said, look, I'm very happy with my two mommies and my two daddies. And it's just about love. My two daddies love each other. My two mommies love each other. And they're sitting there smiling and so on. They're probably very nice people in many ways. And, you shouldn't restrict this. Well, it's noble of a 12-year-old kid to want to do this. And I don't doubt that the two sets of, quote, parents care about him. You know, our oldest granddaughter is 12. Thinking, oh yeah, she knows exactly what's right about upper. She is now an expert. She could get up and lecture the entire world about exactly the right components of a marriage, of a family, like any 12-year-old could. Give me a break. They're kids. They're impressionable kids. But 12-year-old with two dads and two moms is going to be lecturing us, and we're like, oh, well, very touching. Wake up, friends. Wake up. 866-34-TRUTH. Early in the show, I said I've got bad news for you, but it's good overall. Why? Because when it gets dark enough, you got to turn the light on. You just got to turn the light on. Let me go to the phones. Anthony, I lost Anthony. I was going to start there, but I won't. 866-348-7884. In fact, let me read something else to you here. Where is this? Come on, why is the story I'm looking for always the one that's hidden? I think it's like demons rearranging these papers. Now, actually, there are real demons, and they are destructive, and they are ugly, and all of that, but they did not rearrange the papers here on my desk. Here we go. It was just buried. Starbucks. I interacted with Starbucks in, 9 years ago, when God started laying it on my heart to get involved with gay activist issues, maybe about 7 years ago. And they were aggressive sponsors of the gay pride events in our city, very open, proud sponsors. And some of our students in our ministry school were working at Starbucks and were talking about just how aggressive they were, pro-homosexual and different things like that. So I contacted someone from Starbucks named Kevin Carruthers. It's actually 2005. He was from public affairs at Starbucks. And I raised concerns to him about the lewd displays that were taking place at the gay pride event in the presence of toddlers and little children in a public park. And he wrote back and said to me, Starbucks is deeply committed to our mission statement and guiding principles. One of our six principles is, quote, embracing diversity as an essential component to the way we do business. This includes the gay and lesbian community. Supporting local events like the Gay Pride Festival in Charlotte gives us the opportunity to live by the values we have set. When I asked him very politely on the phone when we talked, and he was polite with me, then have they sponsored pro-life events? Have they sponsored events celebrating teen abstinence? Have they sponsored events celebrating natural marriage, male-female marriage? I don't even think I got to that point before he said, I don't like the way this conversation is going. Jumped in. Oh, no, no, we don't mean that by diversity. No, no, no. So some folks documented some of the abuses taking place at these events. And if it had been a public heterosexual event, it would have been very offensive if those same things were taking place. And someone put pictures together and it just advised, don't just open this in public. I mean, this is raunchy, bad stuff. And put the packet together and then sent it off just with a warning. There's some real vulgar material in here, but want you to know what's happening at the event. And he called me and then reiterated in writing, September 2nd. As we discussed, Starbucks is a company committed to its guiding principles, which includes embracing diversity. My question in my book, A Queer Thing Happened to America, is it diversity or is it perversity? He wrote, it is an essential component of the way we do business. It's important to our many partners, employees, and customers in the 36 countries we serve. While we welcome differing points of view and respect your opinion, we remain committed to supporting events that promote diversity and inclusion, such as the Gay Pride Parade. Well, at a recent shareholders meeting, this is last week, one gentleman, Tom Strobar, who's a shareholder and founder of the Corporate Morality Action Center, pointed out that after the company voiced its support for a referendum backing gay marriage in Washington State, a boycott by traditional marriage supporters caused a drop in sales revenue. Howard Schultz, the CEO, responded, you can sell your shares in Starbucks and buy shares of another company. In other words, if you didn't agree with the company's pro-gay marriage stand, take your business elsewhere, says Starbucks. Well, you work that out for yourself. I'm simply reporting to you. All right. How can you have a revolution without revolutionary literature, without things that will show you what a Jesus revolution is and where the changes need to come in us in the church and how we live it out in the world? I've written two books that by God's grace have been very, very well received, but they've never been put out in digital form until this week. In 2 days, they will be released in digital form. And instead of paying $32 for revolution and revolution in the church, and trust me, these books, you'll read them and you'll never forget them. They will impact you. They're now available in digital form, and we've reduced the price this week, so you can download both for just $15.99. If you can help with an additional gift, that's awesome. But here's the number to call. You need to give us an email address because we cannot send a digital book to you physically, all right? And then you'll get an email follow-up telling you exactly how this will be coming to you. You get a free reading app with Verso, so you can read this on any cell phone, smartphone, tablet, PC, computer. Call this number, 1-800-278-9978. And you can order these as gifts, too. Multiple copies, just with different email addresses for each one. 1-800-278-9978. If it's easier to order online, go to our website, AskDrBrown.org. Click on the online bookstore to do that. 1-800-278-9978. The revolution is going digital.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, activist, author, international speaker, and theologian, Dr. Michael Brown. Your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution.
Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Can you believe this? This quote has to be at least 50 years old because A.W. Tozer died over 50 years ago. Tozer said this: religion today is not transforming the people. It is being transformed by the people. It is not raising the moral level of society. It is descending to society's own level and congratulating itself that it has scored a victory because society is smiling, accepting its surrender. Michael Brown, welcome to your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. This whole week, we're looking at the theme of Jesus' revolution. Today, talking about the tipping point we're in society, where neutrality is no longer possible, where you can't just sit back and say, hey, I'm just going to stay out of the fray. You can't. I mean, first, as followers of Jesus, we're called to be in the thick of the battle between good and evil, in the thick of the battle between Satan and God, in the thick of the battle between spiritual light and spiritual darkness. I don't mean hating people. God forbid. I don't mean physical violence. Absolutely not. If you've listened to me for more than 30 seconds ever, you know I'm not talking about that type of war or battle. I'm talking about when we take on a biblical mentality and realize I'm not here primarily for this world. I'm not here primarily to enjoy sports. I'm not here primarily to have a nice family. I'm not here primarily to have a good job. I'm not here primarily to have a nice home, even though you may have all of the above and sometimes even enjoy sports. No. We're here to be disciples and make disciples. And often we fall asleep in the midst of the society. Often we fall asleep in the midst of the carnal world. Often we fall asleep as if the great goal was just to have a nice life. And when things get really bad and when things go really far and when compromise starts to take over the church in such ways that you can do nothing but speak, that's when we're at that breaking point, that tipping point. That's where revolutions happen. Look, look at countries like Cyprus right now, where the banks are seizing people's funds, especially some large amounts of unsecured funds, say Russian billionaires have in Cyprus banks. I don't understand how the system works well. I'm just reading some of the news reports. But you've got some of these countries, the threat of seizing funds and threat of bankruptcy nationally and threat of other things. And it doesn't take much for a tipping point there. You've got the potential of massive revolution in Egypt or massive violence to put down resistance in Egypt as the Muslim Brotherhood wants to flex its muscles. The fact is that we spiritually have gone limp and have gone soft. Henry Drummond said, if a man does not exercise his arm, he develops no biceps muscle. And if a man does not exercise his soul, he acquires no muscle in his soul, no strength of character, no vigor of moral fiber, nor beauty of spiritual growth. Are you exercising your spiritual muscles? Are you standing up in a morally courageous way? Are you determined to do what's right regardless of cost or consequence? Friends, this is coming our way. Many of you know that I was in Hong Kong earlier in the year teaching Chinese pastors and seminary students the book of Jeremiah for 1 week. And we talked about persecution there. It still exists, but it's not as intense in many ways as it was 10 years ago. And I said, the church in China has grown like no other church in world history. The numerical growth has been unprecedented under communism. I said, how will the church do if a time of prosperity and peace comes? How will the church do if it has more liberty, if it's not so much underground and there's national prosperity? I believe personally, friends, in America, we're going to do better as the persecuted minority than as the ruling majority. Got some good news about what God did in the past. Stay with me.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown. Get into the line of fire now by calling 866-34-TRUTH. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
You know, many years ago, Martin Luther King was challenged as a reverend. Why did he put any emphasis on social change? And he said this: the Christian gospel is a two-way road. On the one hand, it seeks to change the souls of men and thereby unite them with God. On the other hand, it seeks to change the environmental conditions of men so the soul will have a chance after it is saved. 866-34-TRUTH. Before I go to the phones, I want to remind you that in the midst of the anarchy and apostasy of the sexual revolution of the 1960s, the counterculture revolution of the 1960s, that time period that brought massive upheaval to America, upheaval so massive that someone pointed out that if you fell asleep in the year 1960 and woke up in the year 2000, you'd wake up to the divorce rate doubled, teen suicide tripled, reported violent crime up four times, prison population up five times, kids born out of wedlock up six times, people living together out of wedlock up seven times. Some of those numbers are way higher now than they were in 2000. A massive shift took place, a seismic shift in the culture in the 60s. Much of the church did not recognize what was happening, and yet people were praying, and people were crying out for God to bring about change, and God began to move in what's called the Jesus People Movement or the Jesus Revolution. That's when I got saved in 71. So being a product of the counterculture revolution of the 60s, that's what interested me in drugs and rock music and the sinful, decadent life I was living. And then it was through God moving supernaturally without me even knowing it, the Jesus People Movement. June 1971, cover of Time magazine. There's a picture of Jesus looking like a hippie, and it says Jesus Revolution. It was an amazing report to read about how God saved people, radically transformed them. I believe God's going to do it again. I believe there's going to be an amazing harvest, but this time, I believe, as many others do, that it's going to come in particular among those who identify as gay, lesbian, bisexual, transgender. And the question is, will the churches be ready for the harvest? So this is what things looked like and felt like, friends. When Bob Dylan got saved, God knows how real his experience was. Some talk about him perhaps coming back to faith now, speculating. God knows, all right? But he was preaching Jesus and recording Jesus' messages, and his fans were shocked. This is the late 70s, so this is kind of the final part of that wave that began the late 60s, early 70s. But listen to this description from Bill Flanagan in an interview with Patti Smith, courtesy of Legacy Recordings.
I remember a show I saw in Providence, Rhode Island, where somebody yelled, rock and roll, you know, I mean, you get that, and as if they weren't rocking and rolling. And Bob Dylan said something like, I knew Jimi Hendrix, and everybody clapped, yeah, Hendrix, you know. I knew Janis Joplin, yeah, Janis Joplin. I knew all those people who died. If they knew then what I know now, they might be here today. And somebody yelled, what about Jackson Brown? And he said, well, Jackson Brown, he's just running on empty. Somebody said, what about Seeger? Well, Bob Seeger, he's just running up against the wind. What about Springsteen? Bruce Springsteen's born to run, and he'll be running still, but sooner or later they're all going to have to run home. And then they kicked into a song, and it was like, holy cow! You know, open the pool, I'm ready to dive in. Give me the altar call. It was just brilliant. It was really something to see. And it was, you know, I wrote a review of it for the newspaper, and they edited out my final line, which was, well, he's been right about everything else. It's the way he's in
the flesh. Wow. Yeah, this is the kind of thing that was happening. Dylan's a little bit later in the scene there, the late 70s, but we've got to put our trust in the living God to save people. We've got to put our trust in the living God to change people. and we've got to live it out first. We've got to be the ones that take hold of God and quit playing games and quit with silly compromise. And if we're pastors and leaders, quit figuring out how, if I take this stand, the tithing member is going to leave. If I take this stand, the board's going to be upset. Walk in humility, walk in grace, but draw a line in the sand and say, I've got to obey God. I've got to stand for truth. And this is my moment. This is my moment to make a difference. All right, I want to go to the phones, but while I'm talking about Bob Dylan, this is amazing. There was an atheist protest that was organized because of one of his concerts. So he's being interviewed by Bruce Hyman on KMGX Radio in Tucson, Arizona, regarding a press release from the Chapter of American Atheists.
Okay, my name is Bruce Hyman, H-E-I-M-A-N, and I'm with KMGX Radio here in Tucson.
Uh-huh.
Okay, and we got a press release from the Tucson Chapter of the American Atheists.
Right.
And they said in response to your recent embrace of the born-again Christian movement, they plan to leaflet your upcoming concert. They say, recognizing the need to inform those in attendance that the new Dylan cause célèbre is a repressive and reactionary ideology, local members intend to attract attention to the contradictions between the previous content of your art form and the message which your songs now expound.
Well, what is it? What is it exactly that they're protesting?
Well, I think what they're against, there's another statement that they make. It says
they're against the doctrine of Jesus Christ, or that he died on the cross, or that man is born into sin. Just what exactly are they protesting?
That's just amazing. Let this be a reminder to pray for Bob Dylan, that God will use him in the last years of his life, or it's decades, however many he has ahead of him. But that God will really bring him to himself in a profound way. And if you really knew the Lord back then, that the Lord will bring him back. 866-348-7884. Paul in Tampa, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Yeah, I love Dylan, and I love his old stuff, and I didn't know anything about his conversion. That's why I listen to you. You throw that pop culture edge in. It's always good. Listen, I listening to you has given me strength to go out and do some things that I normally wouldn't have done in the past. You know, I've been out protesting abortion clinic here in Tampa, and you know, people have seen my face that I know, my neighbors, my you know, people that I work with in my business. I'm on a soccer field. Someone turns around, you know, and says, "Hey, weren't you out there protesting an abortion clinic?" And I said, you know, I got frightened for a minute because everyone turned around and looked at me, all the parents, you know, and I'm like, yeah, that was me. And that was my moment, you know, where I finally decided that, you know, I really don't care what everyone says, you know, that you know, weren't you out on that street corner with your family protesting that abortion clinic? And I looked around and I for a minute there, I almost felt like walking away. But then, you know, something, you know, stuck in me and said, you know, yeah, that was me. And, you know, and I think someone noticed that I was a little uncomfortable for a bit there. And, you know, being uncomfortable is okay. It's okay to feel uncomfortable as long as you can persevere through that bad feeling. And someone came up to me later who I've had arguments with before, you know, respectful arguments about morality and such, and I know what side that they were on. And she came up to me and she said, listen, she goes, don't let anything that anyone says bother you. At least you stood up for something that you believed in. And it came from the person who I least expected it to come from.
Really?
And, you know, I think that if we can just step outside our comfort zone and not be afraid of what other people will say, then we can have an effect. Even on people who you may have disagreed in the past, may have seen you do something, and maybe they'll take another look at it. I think these problems start in the womb. And we have to protect that sanctuary.
Yeah. Let me say this, and I so appreciate the call, Paul, and I'm so blessed that we can be involved in standing with you. There is that thing where once you're publicly identified, I've been through it, be it for Jewish ministry, be it for other issues, or you're that guy, you're that person. There's that sting of rejection, but the first thing is, okay, Jesus told us to expect it, and that's how he was treated, and worse, so that's what we should expect. The second thing is, many people do respect a person that takes a stand for what they believe is right. And if every person on that field glared at you, you know, you could smile at them and say, I think every kid has a right to come into this world and play soccer one day. I wish there were a whole lot more kids on this field that had an opportunity. You know, it's about life. It's not protesting abortion. It's loving life. And
I was afraid. Inside, my stomach turned, and I felt my adrenaline bust in my stomach, almost like a fight or flight reflex. But I stood there, you know, and I thought about what you had said before about perseverance and courage. And it was funny because our bishop just the week before had come during a confirmation celebration and said that his main tenet was courage as a Christian, having courage.
And Paul, I've got to jump in. We have a break, but that blesses me more than I know, because one reason we're on the air is to help impart courage to God's people to stand and do what's right. And Paul, you're going to have a whole lot of admirers. Yeah, people reject you and mock you, but you're going to have a whole lot of admirers. And then some kids that are going to grow up in this world, thanks to you, and come to know Jesus.
It's The Line of Fire with your host, Dr. Michael Brown, your voice of moral, cultural, and spiritual revolution. Here again is Dr. Michael Brown.
Well, Paul in Tampa, if you're still listening, presumably on WTBN, I tweeted this quote out a few weeks ago from Billy Graham. Courage is contagious. When a brave man takes a stand, the spines of others are often stiffened. Come on. That's reality. That's reality. You stand for what's right in love and compassion with brokenness, others will be changed. Here, mark this down. A simple saying came to me in recent weeks. We need hearts that are broken and backbones of steel. Hearts broken with compassion, hearts broken with mercy, hearts broken with care for a hurting, dying world, and backbones of steel that refuse to cave in and refuse to compromise. Amy Carmichael said this: if I'm afraid to speak the truth lest I lose affection, or lest the one concerned should say you do not understand, or because I fear to lose my reputation for kindness, if I put my own good name before the other's highest good, then I know nothing of Calvary love. Oh, I've got to just send out the end of that quote. If I put my own good name before the other's highest good, then I know nothing of Calvary love. Who cares if people hate you, mock you, reject you, misunderstand you, if what you're doing is for the glory of God and for their ultimate good? Yeah, we care because we care about the people, but ultimately it's not our reputation that matters. It's the glory of God and helping individuals. Let's go to Aaron in Algonquin, Illinois. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hey, Derek Brown. How you doing?
Doing very well. Thank you.
Very good. I just had a quick question. I don't believe it's off topic, but it seems it might be a little bit. But if the Bible mainly speaks about the Middle East and, you know, the trouble and, you know, how things are going to be worse, and would you believe as far as the West or the rest of the world? I mean, I know that things will be worse, but, like, is it just the main things will happen in the Middle East, or is it going to just get worse everywhere?
Well, Aaron, it's an excellent question, and it's certainly related to the subject matter. First, the Bible speaks primarily about the nations in that part of the world because that's where most of it was written, or where the main players lived, or the main events unfolded. But certainly, the scriptures tell us plainly that the gospel will go to all the world before the end will come, that there'll be disciples of all nations, and that the Holy Spirit will be poured out on all flesh. So I see two things. I see, on the one hand, a lot of apostasy, darkness falling away as we get closer and closer to the end of the age. And at the same time, I see a great increase in harvest worldwide. We don't know how close we are to the end. And the worst mistake is to think, well, we're right at the end. Everything's coming down. Let's not even try. The devil would love for us to believe that. I see the end of the age as parallel extremes. As Jesus taught one of his parables in Matthew 13, that the harvest, the end of the age is like a harvest or a great catch of fish, and there's a multitude of good and bad. That's what I expect. So as the darkness gets darker, it's going to underscore the light getting brighter, and God's going to move in the midst of it. So when I see a lot of bad things happening, I hate to see it I hate to see the lives that are going to be affected and destroyed. But on the other hand, I'm encouraged because I know that sometimes it's in the midst of the greatest darkness and pain that God stirs his people to wake up. So does the Bible explicitly speak to American prophecy? I don't believe it. I don't see it specifically. It doesn't speak necessarily to other nations, but it does speak about the entire world. And that's of concern to God. Every nation, every people turning to him. And outside of America, there's some of the greatest revival taking place in world history, Latin America, Africa, Asia. So let's be encouraged by what God is doing. And as we see all the junk around us, let's say, okay, time for us to roll up our sleeves, get to work, and get right with God. But thank you for the call. It's very relevant.
All right. Thank you.
All right. God bless you. 866-34-TRUTH. Time for one or two more calls. Paul in Clearwater, Florida. Thanks for calling the Line of Fire.
Hello. How are you?
Oh, I'm blessed, man.
Okay, listen, but I just want to make a quick comment. It is going to get darker, okay? But if we as Christians feed on God's word, which is the light of the world, when it gets dark, the people, the unbelievers, are going to see the light in us. It's not our light, but it's God's light. So we need to rejoice, and we need to keep on. And two scriptures that come to mind is in Ezekiel. In Ezekiel 22:30, it's interesting. It was a wicked world, and yet God looks down and he says, and he sought for a man who would stand in the gap, and he didn't find anybody interceding. He wasn't pointing at the unbelievers. He was saying, where are my people who are praying so I could move? And then in Isaiah 59:16, same situation. And God wondered that there was no intercessor.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is this. We who are Christians, he has brought us in this time of history not to protest outside and saying, don't do this, don't do this. But the revolution starts on our knees, going before our master and say, Lord, who or what do you want me to pray for? And if the prayer comes from heaven, it will be answered at the appointed time.
Yeah, Paul, there's no question that anything that's going to be good is going to come out of us starting on our knees, humbling ourselves before God. Evan Roberts in the Welsh Revival said that his mission, his calling, was to get the church on its knees, and a church on its knees cannot be conquered or overcome. You know, certainly we can still do things socially. If there was slave trade going on, we'd still speak out against it. However, everything must start in utter dependence on God, crying out to him, seeking his face, and then standing, reaching out, acting. And Paul, great passages you quoted. Interestingly, Isaiah 59, when God finds no intercessor, there he reaches out and there he acts. But I've said for many years, I'll say it again, the greatest problem in America today is not so much the presence of darkness, it's the absence of light. And as you were talking about, as things get darker, you know, we're in the Word more and more. It reminded me of when you hold one of these incandescent frisbees up to a light and you hold it up there for a while. And then you turn the lights out and the thing shines and you could throw it in the dark. Well, the darker it gets, the more we're with the Lord, the more we'll shine and our light will be seen. Thank you, sir, for the call. Friends, revolution has to start in the church. Start with us. I'm thrilled to say that my two books on revolution, which God has used, it's all his grace, to really impact many, many tens of thousands or hundreds of thousands of people, Revolution and Revolution in the Church, together they're $32. We finally have them in digital form, and you get a free Verso Bible reading app so that you can read these on your smartphone, on your computer, tablet, and when you come to a verse I may have in the book, you just click on it, actually brings the verse up. Half price, if you order today, $15.99, half of the print price. Call 1-800-278-9978, 1-800-278-9978. You need to give us your email address, and then we'll send you instructions on how to download the books. Be among the first to get these. They're just coming out in 2 days. 1-800-278-9978. Or go to our online bookstore, askdrbrown.org, and just click on the online bookstore. This is a great way to join the revolution. Get this revolutionary material right on your phone, computer, tablet. My bottom line today, the Great Commission can be paraphrased as Jesus saying to you and to me, come, let's go and change the world together.